Welcome to Disruptive Adventism. My name is Jose Briones, and I'll be your host for this podcast. This podcast is about discussing the polemical statements and practices that are part of the Adventist fabric, which in turn shape this belief system to be unique and relevant for today's society. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in to Disruptive Adventism once more. We appreciate your support. So today we're going to be talking about independent artists. We're starting a mini-series on independent artists. So we'll be talking with two different artists right here. We'll be talking with Aaron Bruce first, and then we're going to be talking in a later podcast with Michelle Odinma. So make sure to tune in for those. And today, as I said, you know, we have Aaron Bruce with us. He is a artist here based in Chattanooga, Tennessee, in the Collegedale area. So here we have him with us. So how's it going, Aaron?
I'm doing well.
That's awesome, man. Well, before we kind of start talking about some of the independent artists' struggles or positive things, like, you know, things that you have come along your journey, share with us, who are you, where are you from, what are you doing, and what's life right now?
Great. You said the most important part. My name is Aaron Bruce. I'm 23 years old. I'm originally from Tacoma Park, Maryland. I've been making music for going on 9 years now. I've been making noise ever since I was tiny. But I started guitar lessons my eighth grade year. Then in high school, I got involved in praise and worship and I started writing songs. And then that kind of snowballed into being in college, being involved with, larger scene praise and worship and being involved with different praise and worship ministries. My freshman year of college, I got an off-campus job and saved up enough to buy a little recording system. And then my freshman year, I released a CD. My sophomore year, I released a second CD. And then, you know, one thing kind of led to the next, and here I am. So I'm a songwriter and a singer. I play guitar and I make music about my religious experience. I think if I'm able to be vulnerable and genuine with the ways that God has interacted in my life and just with the experiences that I've had, I think people will be attracted to that. And I think that will uplift people and that can help people think about what's most important to them and hopefully affect the way that they live their lives daily.
So you've been songwriting and doing these things since college, kind of like more seriously per se, we can say.
Yeah.
What are some of the things that you can take from your journey? Some positives that you have seen happen in your journey as an artist?
I want to make sure I understand your question. You're wondering what are some of the like positive takeaways from,
from
the like beginning of my songwriting experience?
Yes. What have you seen when you have maybe sung at a concert or maybe you have had an experience. Or I don't know, anything that's like a positive thing that has come about from you kind of taking this as a serious role?
I see. I think one of the most humbling takeaways that turns out to be the most positive is the idea that everyone has to pay dues. And what I mean by that is you really build character with every gig, you know, with every concert that you play, with every performance. It kind of reinforces who you are and why you're doing what you're doing, because a lot of the concerts that I've played for haven't been super packed. You know, my expectations have not always been met with the reality that I wanted. And I think in a profound way, it's reminded me of what's important. Because if I'm really trying to make a difference, there's no rule that says that you have to have a minimum of this many people at your concert, you know, in order to make a difference. Mm-hmm. You know, if I look at the example of Jesus, you know, he didn't always interact with hundreds of thousands of people, you know, his most intimate and special interactions were with 12 people, you know. And so I've found a bit of a conflict, like an internal conflict with what I'm called to do and what I say is important, but then what the world says is important in terms of, you know, you have to sell out shows, you know, everyone has to care, you have to trend, You have to sell a lot, when in reality, you know, if I inspire one person, you know, that should be enough. If I'm really doing this for the reason that I say that I'm doing this, it shouldn't be about the numbers. And so to reiterate my answer in maybe fewer words, I've really had to learn that it's more important that I have quality interactions with people than it is that I interact with a large quantity of people. Mm.
I bet that's hard because, well, you know, numbers do translate into maybe financial backing. Mm. And, you know, maybe as an independent artist, you're thinking, well, I do need to sell a certain amount of CDs or maybe like offset the cost of equipment mm-hmm. and recording and time, like, you know, that you're putting in there.
For sure.
But I mean, I really like what you're saying, that this idea of just being able to interact with quality mm-hmm. instead of with a large quantity. How have you found, like, have you had an opportunity to have a large audience? How have you interacted with those two different, like a small audience? Which one do you prefer? Maybe that's the question that I'm trying to ask. Mm-hmm. Do you prefer like the large audience or the smaller audience that you have, you know?
I think having a large audience definitely feeds my ego. There's nothing wrong with having a large audience. You know, I mean, if a lot of people mm-hmm. want to come, then you'll have a large audience, you know, for whatever reason they might want to come. And sometimes just by chance, you know, there are fewer people. I think just as a person, I find it easier to be intimate when there are fewer people. You know, and I think I can get a better sense for the room when there are fewer people. And so I think I'm a lot more relaxed when there are fewer people. I might open up a little more when there are fewer people than when there's a larger group. I think the more people it is, the more I tend to be, you know, formal. I don't know if that's just psychology or, you know, how I've taught myself to do things. As far as, you know, trying to balance the idea of wanting to reach a lot of people, but also make money. I've been a work in progress as far as that goes, because there was a time, in my journey where I didn't know a whole lot. You know, I felt convicted to move in this direction, you know, and to be intentional with music. But, you know, there's the starving artist stereotype. And I think just because of the industry that music has or is, you know, that stereotype is a reality. You know, you have to find a way to make money. And those pathways for making money are not always set in stone. You know, it's not as if you can always get a job doing this or always get a job doing that. It's very capricious. And so, whereas before I had this kind of blind faith idea that, you know, God wants me to do music, so God is going to make a way for me to do music. I transitioned from that mentality to God has put this burden on my heart and I want to make that a reality. And so I'm going to do whatever it takes to be able to do that. I'm a married man, and so that instantly shifts my priorities, you know. Hmm. And it's definitely the best decision I've ever made. But just part of being an adult is realizing, you know, that most musicians who are single people are able to put music as number one, you know, and so they can, you know, skip meals if they need to. They can, you know, be homeless if they need to. They mm-hmm. can sell their car. They can do whatever they need to do to make music number one. But my wife is number one. You know, my family is number one. And so I've kind of had to learn a hard lesson that I appreciate, but I learned that ultimately it's just about getting the message out there, meaning maybe music isn't the only thing that I do, you know, whereas initially I wanted to, you know, maybe just perform and play and have gigs and, you know, that's all that I do. And I'm able to support everyone off of that. You know, maybe I'll work a 9-to-5 job, just a regular 9-to-5 job that my degree didn't prepare me for, you know, but with the time that I have after that, I'll put everything into that ministry, and that will be enough. Why? Because ultimately it's about getting the message out there. You know, my number one goal isn't to have music as a full-time job, you know, because the gospel message and God's interaction in my life is not limited by whether or not music is my full-time job or whether it's something I do on the side.
When you're talking about family, when you're talking about your wife, and when you're talking about this inspiration kind of like that you get and from the interactions that you have with people, something that kind of played through my head is just like the idea that sometimes we may do things on the side first. And I guess a lot of content creators do get frustrated at some point in time where it's like, man, I have this talent, I have this ability, and I want to use it for God's glory, but the market is not ready. Or, you know, maybe, man, people are not supporting yet, you know, and I have to do something extra. But I like the attitude that you're taking in the sense that you're saying, you know what, I'm going to do this as a service. Kind of like this just kind of comes out of your heart, like, you know, to do whatever it takes to, you know, just continue doing music, but that may not be the number one thing. And it's kind of like complimentary, but it's like, you know, it's not just necessarily, that's not all you're doing. And something that kind of came to my brain, because you kind of keep recurring into this family theme, is where do you get your quote unquote inspiration? You know, every artist, like, you know, proverbially, a lot of people are like, oh, where do you get your inspiration from? So where do you draw that power to keep going, even though, you know, you may not be outselling Hillsong, for example, you know?
I'm very opinionated on, like, Hillsong, for example. I think that should be another podcast. So I heard two questions in there. One was, you know, kind of where do I draw my inspiration? And the other was this idea of, like, you know, how do I accept that I have this gift that I want to share, but the world doesn't seem ready for it. As far as my inspiration, I don't really romanticize things. I'm not very idealistic.
Okay.
I think I'm very realistic. So, like, I don't really think of, like, where I get my inspiration from, you know, like, I'm inspired when this happens. I think it's more just, it's really just everyday life. I mean, I love nature. You know, I sing a few songs about nature, but I think my inspiration comes from my thoughts. If you know me, I really like to think, and I really like to talk about thought processes and philosophies and stuff. And so I think, like, a lot of my song ideas are just birthed from me thinking about something and finding irony in something. And I want to express that, you know, in the form of a situation that I experienced, or in the form of a story that I heard someone say, or in the form of someone's life that I interacted with. And then the second question, just the idea of balancing the gift that you have versus what you're actually able to do. I think people conflate something being successful from a business perspective with God using it. So, like, the language I heard you use was like, man, you know, like, I have this gift and I want to use it for God's glory, but the market isn't ready. And that's very interesting, because one might assume that you're only able to use it for God's glory if the market is ready. In other words, I'm only using it for God's glory if I'm able to monetize it. I'm only using it for God's glory if I'm able to support myself with it. And I believe that those are two separate categories, right? Because 7 people could listen to my podcast, right? But if I'm living a genuine testimony, those seven people are exactly what God wants. And I think it takes humility, and I think it takes reflection to be able to accept that maybe that's God's will for now, you know? And I think I've had to come to that understanding and come to that. I've had to come to that understanding because the world says that this is successful if it monetizes. This is successful if it's popular. This is successful if it is self-supporting. When in reality, whether or not it changes lives is completely separate from how many people it reaches and from how much money it makes. And so to those people who are out there listening who might say, you know, I have this gift, but it's not really catching on. You know, people don't really seem to value it to the point where they're willing to support me enough to do it. Even to you in this podcast, you know, like, regardless of how popular it becomes or regardless of how much it picks up, I believe that if you are responding to a call that God has put in your heart and you're doing something intentionally to give people purpose, to make people think, even if it's just one person, even if you have one faithful follower, like, I believe God is using that. Now, whether or not God chooses to bless that to the point where, you know, it's marketable, it's able to self-sustain, I think that's another thing. You know, and there are some people who are able to do that with their ministries, and some people who aren't. But I think what's most important is that we realize that business success is not the same as spiritual success.
Yeah, that's deep. I mean, like, just thinking from a perspective of, I think that's something that I really take to heart, especially when creating this podcast. Like, you know, and like, deciding to kind of keep going and keep pushing it is like, if people listen to it, if one person does it, you know, and even if no one, you know, listens, but I know that I'm doing what God's calling me to do, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
I'm just going to continue. And then, I mean, I know, like, God blesses, like, definitely, like, you know, we're very blessed with our podcast. Like, you know, we've been, I guess, I don't know, we crossed 30,000 like the other day, and it was like, whoa. I was like, dang, yo, like, that's so many downloads, you know. I mean, probably like per episode we get maybe 600 or 700.
Yeah.
And that's really amazing, you know. I'm really happy that you guys are listening, and but I think that when I look at those numbers, I need to look at people. We need to look at people rather than like numbers.
For sure,
numbers.
For sure.
But it's so like tempting. You know, to be like, oh, wow, like, you know, look, all these people listening to me, or like, you know, it, like you said, it feeds your ego instead of like looking at it from the real perspective that people are being changed. People are listening. People are looking at something different, something that you said that you're really opinionated. So I kind of want to bring maybe a little bit more in that, like, from this perspective of,
I don't want to chase any of your followers.
Nah. It's all good. But When you talk about Hillsong, for example, I'm gonna use that phrase again,
buzzword,
and or maybe Elevation, you know, here in the United States, how do you feel? Like, do you feel, quote unquote, maybe like intimidated by them? Is that something that you feel that it's like, oh wow, I'll never match that quality? Because I'll give you an example, like, you know, when I listen to other podcasts, like, you know, when I listen to NPR, or like I listen to maybe like other news podcasts, or maybe even there's a great podcast called The Liturgists, you know, great content, great quality. And sometimes I'm like, man, I want to improve. I want to get there, you know, but there is a difference between having a studio like NPR, you know, and recording wherever you can record.
For sure.
You know,
sure,
and like sure. The mics that you use and everything, you know, these things make a difference. But I sometimes feel intimidated, you know, as a podcaster. It's like somebody's doing a better job. But I'm like, you know what? I'm doing what I can, like, you know, sure. with what we have. But as an artist, like, do you ever feel like you want to get to that quote unquote Hillsong level or like Elevation level? Do you feel intimidated by that, or does that give you maybe like aspiration?
plot twist. Neither.
Okay, that's fine.
Yeah. So I want to be very, very careful because I admire the attention, the intentions that I'm assuming Hillsong and Elevation and Bethel, you know, that they have. Mm-hmm. I assume they're genuine. I assume they only have the best intentions for praise and for lifting up Jesus. But I think that I'm doing something different than what they're doing. And I'll try to break down why without getting too soapboxy. Before that, I just want to say also, I'm not intimidated. I don't think I'm intimidated by many people, and it's not because like I think I'm the best or anything. I think it's just because like I realize what I'm doing and why I'm doing it. And so since it's not a competition, even though it might as well be a competition, you know, because, you know, a dollar that they get is a dollar that I don't get, mm. you know, that's one way to look at it. But I don't feel the need to be intimidated because, if we're all doing what God is asking us to do, then what business is it of mine to want their exposure, mm. right? Or to want their revenue, you know, mm-hmm. or to want their branding, or want their attention, because it's really not their attention. You know, even that thought like shows that my mind is in the wrong place, right? Because it's God's attention, mm. right? Like them appreciating quality lyrics that uplift them and that, you know, make them think of God's splendor, or his profundity, like at the end, like that's really not their, it's really not their goodness. It's really not their lyricism. Like it's God's lyricism that he's imparted to them. And so when I want that for myself, like that's taking that from God, you know, it's not even wanting mm. their fame. It's wanting God's fame. And so I think obviously I can say that, but then in my heart, it's a little different, you know? So, I mean, that's, I think part of the internal human struggle of saying like, this is right. Now I just have to live what I'm talking. Mm. Back to what I was saying about them doing something different. I think that Christian contemporary music has become a trend. Mm-hmm. And with trends, come the necessity or the desire to recreate trends and to profit off of trends. And so while I believe, I have to believe that those who are doing it genuinely, that is creating Christian contemporary music, I think that a bit is lost. Mm. I think a bit of the creative beauty, the creative individuality is lost. Because this is a trend that people seek for, right? Like Christian contemporary music all sounds the same. I say that respectfully, almost objectively, like it all has a feel. You know, you can mm-hmm. hear a song and say, you know, this sounds like worship music. You mm-hmm. know, whether it's the type of lyrics being used or the type of instruments being used or even the like vibe, you know? And I think because Christian contemporary music is so trendy, that a lot of those songwriters and musicians who create it sacrifice the individuality that comes from everyone's personal experience with God. They sacrifice that in order to make something sound like what has come before it so that it can be marketable, so that it can be sellable. Mm. Right? Because Christian contemporary music is trending and because it's the most popular, people want music that sounds like that.
The high quality.
I think, naturally. Not even so much high quality versus low quality, but just like the content. Like, it's very poetic. Mm. It's very, very general. It can sometimes be vague. And I think in creating music that is extremely poetic, vague and general so that it can be catered to a large amount of people, you know, the more general a song is, the more people can relate to it. Mm-hmm. I think you hide the vulnerability that comes from someone specifically writing about a personal experience. Mm. I think there's a risk that comes with someone writing about a personal experience, especially if they're trying to market it, right? Because the more specific and the more vulnerable an experience is, the higher the risk that fewer people will appreciate it, right? Let's say I write a song about how much I love sports, right? Mm-hmm. People who love baseball, people who love basketball, people who love curling, all of those people would probably find things that they can relate to in that song. But let's say I wrote a song about how much I love basketball. The soccer players, the baseball players, the curlers, the wrestlers, all of those people are left out, right? And likely will not buy my song, will not listen to my song, will not connect to my song. And so I think musicians find themselves at a crossroads where it's like, you know, will I write a song that's deeply personal? Or will I write a song that is marketable? And oftentimes there is a fork in the road where you have to choose. You know, there's a middle ground. And I think a lot of artists also kind of walk that middle ground well, because, you know, there are some personal songs that people can still relate to. And there are some personal songs that it's like, why did this person make this into a song? And so I think Hillsong and Elevation have definitely gone in the direction of marketable as opposed to personal. And I think I don't seek that. And so for what they're doing, Hillsong and Elevation and Bethel Worship and the other ones that I'm not familiar with, they're doing a great job. I'll even say they're doing the best job. But I don't know that I could honestly say that that's the most impactful. Like I said, I think they have a very specific target audience, and they've moved in that direction very well, very intentionally. They're very marketable. It's very catchy. It's still quality music. But I think as far as the impact that it had for getting people to really think about their practice, their theology, their thoughts even, I think it's really lacking. Because it's tried so hard to be relevant and to be generally applicable to everything, that it's lost that personal touch that should be foundational in religious music. Period.
That's a lot to take in one yes. take. Like, and I mean, I appreciate it because coming from you, I mean, like you're trapped, like you're journeying throughout this arena, you know, as an independent artist. And that's like, it's very refreshing to hear your thoughts. Like, you know, cause that's, now you're talking about, you make personable music, like, you know, walk me through, what's your theme? Like, you know, maybe do you have like a specific theme that you try to hit throughout, or is it more localized, like to your experience, to what you're going through, to the albums that you have made? Are they all different, or do they have like maybe a thread of ideas that are flowing through that?
I think I really hate cliche things, but I think I might have like become cliche in my musical journey a little bit, at least with the like album titles. So the very first CD that I released was called Growth. Mm-hmm. The next CD was called Footprints. The most recent CD actually was just released October 20. Here's a little plug. It's available on iTunes, Spotify, everywhere music is available. It's called Take Time. And so present throughout all of those releases and present in all of that songwriting is the idea of reflection and personal growth. I believe that personal growth is the most powerful tool that we have as Christians. If you're not a Christian, as a person, that's the most powerful tool that you have. Because if you're able to just be intentional, if you're able to have conscious thoughts about what you want to do, and then be self-aware enough to say, are my actions matching those thoughts? Or are my actions matching those intentions? You know, and then you can self-criticize and you can adjust, and in that way you can grow, that will do wonders for you and for everyone around you. And as a Christian, you know, I find myself being a hypocrite so often, you know, that I can't imagine how much worse things would be if I didn't reflect. You know, I try my hardest to reflect and to see, you know, where are my actions not matching up with my talk, and I'm still a hypocrite. But anyway, yeah, the overarching theme is personal growth. And so I still do kind of get on these little tangents with, you know, maybe localized experiences or specific experiences that, that I might have, but I still try to rope it all in with personal growth.
That's awesome. Well, and as you know, as we're starting kind of to go to the end of the podcast, where, again, do a second plug here, where can people find you, like websites, social media, whatever it is?
Cool. So I'm on Instagram primarily. I'm on Instagram at Aaron Makes Music. My name is spelled A-R-E-N. So don't forget that. It's A-R-E-N Makes Music. I've got all of my released music on Bandcamp.com. A little shortcut, if you just type in AaronBruce.com, you can see all of the music released ever, from my very first CD to the most recent release. The most recent release, Take Time, is also available on Spotify. It's on iTunes. It's on Tidal, basically wherever music is available and sold. It's on the Google Play Store. And Facebook.com/AaronBruce is probably the best place to follow if you're interested in following the events and the shows that I'll play.
Well, it's been a pleasure, man, like to have you here and to talk about just the different things that you kind of gone through, and definitely some other topics when it comes to the big shots, like, you know, and and kind of comparing that to your experience. And you know, I really, really appreciate what you have to say in this space. So
yeah, thanks for the opportunity. I love to talk. So.
Yeah, no worries.
If you give me a mic, it's a risk.
Thanks a bunch. And as it is our tradition on Disruptive Adventism, we like to give the final word to our guests. Cool. So what's your final word on independent artists or any of the topics that we have touched?
Oof. I would have to say, be patient. Be intentional, be humble, and be prayerful.
That was our time on the topic of independent artists with Aaron Bruce. And if you want to follow him and keep updated with his shows or music or any content, shirts that he sells, please make sure to go to Instagram and follow him at Aaron Makes Music. That's A-R-E-N Makes Music. Thank you for listening today. We really appreciate it. If you notice a difference in the mic, yes, this mic is a little bit different than the one that we have been using for the past couple of podcasts. We really hope that you're going to enjoy this mic with another mic that we have for guests. This has been a contribution from the Patreons with all the resources and the financial backing that they're giving. It has allowed us to go to this new mic, new recorder system. And we just want to say that we really appreciate that, because this is going to sound so much better. And we really want to increase the quality of the podcast. As I said, you know, this is a financial contribution that people give. If you're not aware what Patreon is, I know I've been mentioning for a couple of episodes, but Patreon is a platform. It's like a GoFundMe, but it's like a monthly contribution. And we start at $1, and we really appreciate when people give to us, because it allows us to increase the quality of the content, the people that are coming. It allows us for, you know, a mini travel budget to go to people and record on the spot instead of having to do a VoIP, voice over IP, that is. But we really appreciate it. And as you may be able to tell, this mic sounds way, way different, and it sounds way better. At least in my opinion, you know, and that's why we got it. But we really appreciate you guys listening and sharing. And that has brought us a lot of, you know, comments and feedback. And we really appreciate those. Keep them coming. Thank you very much for listening today. We hope that you continue to share this podcast and continue to, you know, just help your community and, you know, throughout your journey to share Christ. And that's really what we want here at Disruptive Adventism, for you to live a disruptive life that changes the world. Thank you for listening today. That's been it. And as always, we invite you to be disruptive.